Call the next case.
Commonwealth v. Mergia, Virginia v. Tyson, Senior Assistant Attorney General, Warren C. Campbell, Assistant Attorney General, Appellant Counsel, Charles B. Lester, Appellant.
You may proceed. You're not used to being over there, are you?
No, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I am Lauren Campbell on behalf of the Commonwealth in this appeal. May I please reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal? The Commonwealth has two main arguments today to address why this Court should reverse the Court of Appeals and affirm the trial court below. First, the defendant was convicted under 18.2374.3d, which under this Court's case Dietz decided in 2017, required that the Commonwealth prove the defendant used a communication device for the purposes of soliciting with lascivious intent a minor to commit a number of enumerated sexual activities. Therefore, the Commonwealth did not need to prove a completed solicitation. Nevertheless, our second argument is that the Commonwealth in this case did prove that the defendant's communication actually constituted an entreaty or effort to persuade his minor victim to engage in illegal sexual conduct with him. Turning to our first argument, as this Court decided in Dietz v. Commonwealth, which was decided in 2017, the communication via an electronic communication device, such as a cell phone or a computer, is the actus reus of the crime under the statute. And the purpose for which that communication is made is the mens rea under the statute, such as in Dietz, which was a conviction under subsection B. The purpose was promoting or procuring a child for a number of enumerated actions, whereas here is for the purpose of soliciting a child for another list of enumerated sexual conduct.
That stands in contrast, doesn't it, with the general solicitation statute, 18.229, which is the general solicitation statute, the actus reus actually is solicitation.
Certainly, Your Honor. And it's the Commonwealth's position that this is not a criminal solicitation statute. It is an electronic communication statute that prohibits the facilitation of certain offenses against children, as it is named. So in this case, the actus reus was established by the evidence. Mergia sent the electronic communication via a text message to his minor victim. The evidence equally demonstrated his mens rea, that he intended to solicit his minor victim when he sent that final text message and his total course of conduct in communicating with her over the text messages.
Now, where do you find that specifically in the record?
Specifically,
that was the purpose of the communication.
It is through his entire course of conduct with his minor victim, through his escalation of his behavior with her, through sending her text messages that were very sexual in nature, such as being possessive, using words such as meow, I like the way you make me feel, calling her boo, calling her his secret. There were no reason for him, as her track coach, to be sending these text messages other than for the purpose that he was attempting to cultivate a sexual relationship with her. He sent messages to her about getting his sip on, that he was drinking, and he wishes she was there. He sent these at late times in the evening. He continued this behavior until he sent a culminating text message that was incredibly sexually graphic, that described actions he wanted to partake in with her. The Commonwealth's position is that the entire course of conduct clearly demonstrates his intent, as the trial court properly found, and was reasonable in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, which gets the benefit of all the inferences at trial, because the Commonwealth was the prevailing party at trial.
So the question is, could a rational fact finder have looked at these facts and concluded that he was obviously grooming this girl for a sexual purpose, that obviously wasn't grooming her for track and field? He was grooming her, he was working her, and he was doing it quite conspicuously.
Absolutely, Your Honor. He was grooming her. And I think that turns slightly also to the Commonwealth's second argument, that even under the statutory interpretation that the Commonwealth asserts was found in Dietz and that this court should equally apply, this case is far different from cases such as Ford and Peterson, where the defendant did have this longer relationship with his victim, where
the
he was...
Crawford Ford, I think, is a bigger problem. It's not this case. It's a solicitation case. If ours were a solicitation case, the majority opinion, in my mind, might be reasonable. But it's not a solicitation case. Actus reus was clear. Now the only question is intent. And intent is something that if juries don't get to figure that out, certainly the seven of us are not going to figure it out.
The Commonwealth would absolutely agree with you, Your Honor. Once the Commonwealth established that Mergia sent this text message, this case essentially becomes a sufficiency of the evidence case on intent. And the trial court properly found that the defendant intended to solicit.
So the absence of a statement along the lines of, I'm hereby soliciting you to have sex with me, would be relevant to Ford, because that's a solicitation case, and that's the actus reus. But not relevant here, because here, the only actus reus is you use a communication device. Now the question is, why did you use it?
I agree, Your Honor. The Commonwealth would still submit that the Commonwealth evidence established at trial that there was a completed solicitation for a number of reasons that I discussed in my brief. But in this particular case, this statute is not a criminal solicitation statute. It has a clear language. It's very similar. It's the same exact language in Dietz, which this court has already interpreted, and the Commonwealth would simply submit that once Mergia sent that text message, he completed the act, and now the case turns on whether or not the evidence was sufficient to demonstrate his intent. And the Commonwealth would submit that the evidence was clearly sufficient to demonstrate his intent. There was no other reasonable explanation in the record for a 40-year-old man to be texting his 16-year-old track student. These text messages in their entirety, and even more specifically, that final culminating text message. Turning briefly to the second part of our argument, the Commonwealth would submit that even if this court were for some reason not to find that that is the actus reus and the mens rea under the statute, the Commonwealth did prove a completed solicitation at trial, and the Court of Appeals decision should be affirmed.
Was there oral argument in the Court of Appeals after the remand to reconsider?
No, Your Honor.
So was there a request for oral argument?
Yes, Your Honor. The Commonwealth requested it.
Was it objected to by the defendant, the request for oral argument?
I believe, and if I'm recall, my colleague might be able to correct me, but I believe that his certificate said if the court found necessary.
So
I don't.
The court chose not to hear.
My understanding is the court chose not to hear it and issued that very brief opinion order saying that they found Dietz inapplicable with no explanation. Commonwealth's position is obviously that Dietz is applicable in that it gives the statutory interpretation and construction for which this subsection D should also be interpreted under. Just to turn briefly again to the second part of my argument, I think this case actually is very distinguishable from Ford and from Peterson in that the victim and the defendant had a longer relationship than either of those cases, that there was this element of grooming, that when you look at, even when you're looking under a criminal solicitation, you do look at an entire course of conduct, and you do look at intent. And the Court of Appeals failed to look at either of those and simply found that this is a mere words case. And the Commonwealth would submit that this is not a mere words case. There was much more going on that the defendant committed in this act, these acts. The defendant clearly, from the totality of the evidence, intended to solicit his minor victim. If there are no further questions, I would like to reserve the remaining time for rebuttal.
All right, 6 minutes, 36 seconds.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Charles Lustig, attorney for the appellee in this case, Mark Mergia. We're respectfully requesting that the Court affirm the two Court of Appeals opinions, finding that there was no evidence that Mr. Mergia incited, urged, or encouraged his minor victim in the case to commit one of the prescribed sexual acts under 373.4, 1 through 4. We believe that the Court of Appeals correctly ruled that there was simply no evidence of incitement, and because incitement is the gist of the offense of solicitation, we believe that the Court of Appeals correctly ruled there was not sufficient evidence. The first thing I do want to address is Justice Kelsey talked about the fact that the actus reus in this case is only the communication. I'm not sure I'm perfectly willing to concede that because of the plain and unambiguous language of the statute. If you look at 374.3D, it requires proof of four elements: the use of a communication system, which clearly there was in this case, for the purposes of soliciting, with lascivious intent, any minor, 15 to 17 years of age, to knowingly and intentionally commit a sexual act. So the notion that the language purposes of solicitation is merely mens rea.
What's your purpose? When you ask someone, what's your purpose? You're not asking them what they're going to do, what they did, what they have done. You're asking them, why are you doing this? What's your motive? What's your mens rea in the legal vocabulary?
I see where you're going with that, Justice, but my argument is that the language lascivious intent really establishes the mens rea under subsection C and D of the statute.
Well, there's because no lascivious intent. Isn't it obvious he's grooming this girl? I mean, honestly, I'm struggling with this case quite a lot to see that how it's even reasonably debatable. It's an older man grooming a younger girl for sexual purposes, and he does it through a communication device, and that's the actus reus.
And I think if we were in front of this court on a grooming charge, it may never have reached this court, but I don't believe that there is a grooming statute, and certainly Mr. Merger wasn't charged with a grooming statute. He was charged with recent,
obviously just an expression to explain this kind of behavior. It's for the intent, lascivious intent of developing a sexual relationship with a minor. What other intent could possibly explain it? Give me one alternative intent other than the one that just screams off the page.
But my point is that the evidence in this case did not establish sufficiently that he had committed both the actus reus and the mens rea. Again, I'm not willing to concede that. Now, the court could well rule that under Dietz, and under that means subsection C and D also require only a communication, but this language specifically in there for the purposes of solicitation. I will point out also that in the Hicks case, which was decided by this court, the court said that he was...
Before you go there, didn't answer the question about the lascivious intent. Are you conceding that it's lascivious intent? Or I'm curious, just like Justice Kelsey, what other intent could it be?
But my point is, Your Honor,
I want an answer. I don't think you want to answer it, but what intent could there be other than lascivious intent?
I would not disagree, Your Honor, with that, but I would say that there are additional elements of the statute. It's not enough
that's where you're going. I just want to...
It's not enough that they simply prove lascivious intent. They also have to prove that the communication was made for the purposes of soliciting. And I want to point out in both the Hicks case, which was decided by this court, and in the Brooker case decided by the Court of Appeals, both of those decisions said in dictum that this was a criminal solicitation statute.
Dietz, and that was the whole argument we had in Dietz. And we said, no, it's not a solicitation statute. 18.229 is a solicitation statute. This is not a solicitation statute. It's an actus reus communication statute with solicitation purposes or mens rea.
But that was decided under a separate subsection of 374.3. Subsection B versus subsection C and D, which have very different language and impose additional evidentiary burdens on the Commonwealth and additional elements of proof, mainly for the purposes of solicitation, and that he solicited the victim to knowingly and intentionally commit one of the prescribed acts of C1 through C4.
But aren't all those C1 through C4 examples of what he was purposing to do, as opposed to what he actually actus reus did?
I think that's correct, but I think also we have to look at this court's decision in Huffman, which talks about generally about inchoate offenses and how solicitation is let me find the language that I have. It said that solicitation is the act of the least magnitude which is punishable by the common law. And I think essentially what the Commonwealth is urging the court to adopt is a view that attempted solicitation is enough under the statute. And again, if the court determines that subsection C and D, because of Dietz, are not solicitation statutes, I understand that I have a heavier burden. but I still believe that they have not proven that he intended to solicit his victim, that he didn't get far enough. Unlike any case that's been before this court under either 18.229 or under 18.23743, in every single one of those cases where criminal solicitation was at issue, they said that they had to prove incitement. They had to prove that he urged the victim. That they had to prove that he proposed.
Aren't there two different questions here? His intent is what he's thinking. I intend to do something. I want to get somewhere with this. Actus Reus is, here's what I've done. Solicitation is, I intend to do it, and I did it. I flat out solicited. Here's what I want. Here's what I'm asking of you. This statute under Dietz is, you use a communication device, it's your actus reus, your intent is to do these things. Whether you've actually done them or not, isn't that the issue?
Well, that's one of the issues. I just think that otherwise the lascivious intent language of the statute would be superfluous. And I think
if he was sending communications talking about track and field, you know, games coming up or field hockey or whatever the heck, then of course it wouldn't be a violation of the statute. But if he's sending communications versus doing something benign, then it obviously is what it is.
Well, I think that one of the dangers of adopting that interpretation of the statute is that if you say that the only actus reus is the communication, and then the Commonwealth only has to prove that he intended to solicit the victim, they could find his computer and find some evidence that that was his ultimate intent, but there's no encouragement, there's no incitement, there's no urging. And the Court of Appeals relied heavily on that fact when it said that he had taken no steps.
Well, the Court of Appeals relied upon Ford, and the Court of Appeals thought that they were bound by Ford, since Ford was a Court of Appeals case. We're obviously not bound by Ford any more than we're bound by this decision or review. But Ford was not this statute. Ford was flat-out statutorized common law solicitation, which actus reus is the soliciting act, as opposed to merely the mens rea.
That's correct, but my argument is that subsections C and D are closely analogous to 18.2-29, and I would point to the language in Hicks, which talks about how he had been convicted under 18.2-374-3, which was, quote, the use of a computer to solicit a minor. That's the language of this court in the Hicks opinion in 2005. And in the Booker opinion, which is not, we're not bound by that because it's a Court of Appeals opinion, but it said that he was convicted of 18.2-374.3, which is, quote, the use of a communication system for soliciting a minor in a sex crime.
Well, and I thought that was the point of Dietz, as we cleared all that up, which is no, under this statute, it's the use of the computer is your action, and your intent is soliciting. Whether you actually accomplish the soliciting or not is irrelevant.
Well, and the court is certainly, if that's the court's interpretation of Dietz, but my argument today is that this is the language in subsections C and D require additional elements of proof. They require proof of purpose of solicitation, and they require proof that the purpose of the communication was to incite the victim to commit one of those specific acts. And I think in this case, the defendant in this case never took the next step and said, I want to do this, which is an expression of mere desire under Ford. Nor did he take the step beyond that and say that that he wanted the victim to do this.
And so I think we're these text messages in open court, but how is that true? How is it not obvious that some young girl getting those text messages would not reasonably interpret that to be the man is seeking sexuality with me? Much less, how could a rational fact finder be faulted for being irrational to come to that conclusion, which is our standard of review?
Well, because I think that the defendant did not take any steps to urge her to commit any of those crimes. And
okay, what
was
she have thought? Tell me the alternative. She gets all these text messages. Again, I don't want to read them. And she reads them. And there's one obvious inference, which is he's coming on to me and he's seeking sexual favors from me somehow. But you say it's not that, and no rational fact finder could have concluded that, even though a trial court did. What other thing would she have thought? Oh, this is a big joke. He's just a funny guy, and he's got these weird sexual dreams. He loves to share them with me. It involves me. But he's just funny, and he's joking around. What other thing would a minor think in that kind of environment, other than it's obviously a sexual, he's trying to solicit sex from me?
Well, I think the answer to that question came from the testimony of the victim in this case, who said something to the effect of she didn't think anything of it. Now, I know that that's not significant in a solicitation analysis because we don't have, the Commonwealth did not have to prove at trial that it had any effect on the victim. So her subjective feeling, whether it was sexual or not, is really not important when you're analyzing it as a solicitation statute. But my argument is that every solicitation case that has been before this court and in the Court of Appeals has required that the defendant take some action to urge the victim to commit an underlying crime, a predicate crime. And Mr. Merger never did that in this case. There's also undisputed in this evidence in this case that whenever they were alone, he never did anything inappropriate or said anything appropriate. So I just think that if the court determines that subsections C and D require only proof of communication and only proof of an intent to solicit, the court is extending the boundaries of inchoate criminal law beyond that which is appropriate given this court's ruling in Huffman, which talked about how it is at the outer edges of criminal conduct. And basically, the court would be creating a new category of attempted solicitation. And I just don't think that's an improper reading of all of the case law that the court has handed down in both in the solicitation case under 18.2.29 and also under 18.2.374.3. And again, I would like to point out what the court held in Ford, that a mere expression of desire is not sufficient to constitute solicitation. So if this court is fit to conclude that this is a solicitation case, at worst, Mr. Merger expressed his desire to have sex with this young girl. But under the court's ruling in Ford, that's simply not enough for it to be solicitation. There has to be some kind of urging, some kind of encouragement, some kind of incitement. And nobody could condone the text that he sent. And I think trial counsel conceded that the texts were reprehensible. And if we were here under a charge of grooming, it would be a very different. I suspect we would never even gotten here because the conviction would have been affirmed. But to the extent that the court is willing to hold that this is a solicitation crime, the evidence was not enough. And the Court of Appeals held that he took no steps towards urging the victim to commit an underlying criminal offense.
No steps. Actus reus steps.
Well, that's correct. That's the actus reus. But for the purposes of solicitation, it seems to me is a hybrid of actus reus and mens rea, because you already have a mens rea clause of the statute, which is that he had to send a communication with lascivious intent. So I think why would the General Assembly...
No, the mens rea is purpose of solicitation with lascivious intent to do certain things.
Well, so the court could certainly conclude that, but my argument today is that... That's an additional element that it makes it a solicitation crime, and that the evidence did not show that there was any effort to encourage, incite the victim to commit an underlying crime under C1 through C4.
So in the context of everything else he said, when he also says, wish we could chill right now, that's not asking her to be with him?
Could you repeat that, Your Honor?
One of the texts said, getting my sip on, buzzin', wish we could chill right now. In the context of everything else, that's not encouraging her to be with him?
I don't believe it is, Your Honor. I mean,
so what is it?
Why is it?
No, what is it?
What is
it? If it's not encouraging
her
to be
with him. Well, it's not a solicitation to commit one of the offenses under C1 through C4. Certainly... It's not as far as the defendants have gone, and I see I'm over my time. May I finish my answer?
Absolutely.
It's not as far as defendants have gone in other solicitation cases where they actually said, I want to meet up with you. They arranged for a meeting. And Mr. Merger never did that in this case. He never did anything appropriate when they were alone, and he and he never sought to meet her in private where he could act on this. So I would argue that's certainly one factor to consider, the fact that he sent that text message, but it's not dispositive on the issue of whether there was a solicitation or not.
All right, thank you very much. Rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honors.
The language in this subsection is actually the same language in Dietz, but with different words afterwards. The key point is for the purposes of. In Dietz, under B, the Commonwealth needed to prove that the communication was sent for the purposes of promoting or procuring a child, not that the defendant actually promoted or procured a child. Just as in here, the Commonwealth needed to prove that the defendant used the communication device for the purposes of soliciting, not that he in fact did solicit. Intent is what is important under this statute. It is because it is a statute that is crafted to protect children. And if you look at the totality of the evidence here, the entire record, the entire course of conduct of this defendant, it is clear that the trial court was reasonable when it found that the defendant intended to solicit this victim. If the court has no further questions, the Commonwealth would ask that you reverse the Court of Appeals and affirm the trial court. Thank you.
Well, the next case. You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I'm Brian Carrico here on behalf of Juan Candelaria. In this case, the Court of Appeals has relaxed